Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm back with Chris Henshaw, the absolute best endurance coach in the sport of CrossFit, as well as one of the most successful coaches in the history of the sport. Chris works with over 24 CrossFit Games athletes, including both of the current champions. On this show, we dive into aerobic capacity, what that means, and how you can improve it. We go over how Matt Frazier was able to go from coming almost dead last in a sprint event 2 years ago to this past year getting second place in the sprint event and what went behind that, as well as a lot of different little knowledge bombs and pearls of wisdom that you can use to shift your mindset about your fitness, your endurance, and things that you can take into your training today. Before we get started, if you're a regular listener of this show and you haven't done so already, please throw this show on pause, head to iTunes, and leave me a quick review. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm back with Chris Henshaw, owner of Aerobic Capacity and the subject matter expert of endurance for CrossFit. Chris, thanks for making some time for me, man.
Dude, thanks. Yeah, I had to come all the way to Austin, Texas to see you.
Hell yeah. So now you've been the subject matter expert for CrossFit for about a year.
About a year.
And you've gotten a chance to work with thousands of athletes. What have you learned from that experience so far?
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about how CrossFit operates their business. There is no confusion on my part why they put together a phenomenal seminar. They are incredibly skilled at putting together content and giving the participant an incredible experience. And that has been very eye-opening for me. As far as participants, it's very interesting. We get a broad range of participants, mostly just recreational athletes. I mean, we do on occasion get games level athletes, but in large part it's recreational. And I think the universal thing is the vulnerability of the participant walking in the door in those first 15 minutes. The words they use, the sentences, the questions they ask, it's very clear they're nervous. And I'm very sensitive to those things. I'm very sensitive to an athlete, a participant, a coach who is really exposing some vulnerability. And what I want to do is really relieve them of that. Mm-hmm. There's moments where you certainly could put some fear into them, but it serves no purpose. That moment of vulnerability is really the opportunity to bring them in. And it's a universal. Everybody's vulnerable walking in the door, and I think that that's the case for people that start up CrossFit as well. There's a lot of intimidation associated with it, and if we as coaches are more aware of those things coming in the door, you have a chance to win someone over for a lifetime.
What exactly are they worried about? In what way are they vulnerable?
They think I'm going to hurt them. They think that we're going to do these gnarly workouts. They think that I'm going to take them and you know, yesterday when we did the course in Austin, by the time we ran, it was 90 plus degrees, and they thought that maybe I'm going to take them out for an hour long run. Mm-hmm. And the concern always is, you know, what if I'm straggling behind? What if I'm, you know, everybody's waiting for me? And that's the thing that I'm very sensitive to is that, you know, I have an endurance program back in California at NC Fit, and we've got 70 plus people in that program, and the average athlete is, you know, an 8 minute miler. If I constantly design workouts that are geared for that 5 minute mile athlete, you know, that's there in the class, those 8 minuters are going to be disappointed. They're going to be, you know, bummed out that everybody's waiting for them, and I'll lose them as an athlete. I have to be sensitive to the fact that they want to come out, but they also are vulnerable, right? They want to get better, but they also don't want to be looked upon negatively. Mm-hmm. And they're never going to say any of those things. It's just my job as a coach is to pick up on those. And so we do a lot of skill-based programming. In the course, we do pacing based, where I run them out a certain distance, they get a very small amount of rest, and then they're to run back and land on the exact original starting spot. They don't get a watch. All they hear is stop and start. That's it. And so it's pacing based. And most of the time, the recreational athlete performs the best because they don't overthink the job.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's a really simple way to build people's confidence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that my measure of my performance as a coach is whether or not someone comes back to me the following day. Look, everybody's got a ton of options and time is going to be more and more precious. And if I can get them to want to come back and see me as their choice of fitness tomorrow, then I've done good. The only way that I feel that I can get them to come back is to build a foundation of knowledge in them that they know that they've done good in that particular day. As much as I stroke them and as much as I tell them, you've done a great job, everybody as an adult will see through that. If they know they've done good, then they build their confidence. And as soon as they have true confidence, then they come back. And I think like that's the measure. Like I look at certain games level athletes and I ask myself, you know, am I doing a good job? Because games athletes, it's not like they come back and say, you know, really awesome and you're just such a great guy. And The value is that they've been with me, you know, and stayed with me. I mean, I've had athletes that have been with me, Camille, 4.5+ years. And Camille's a tough, tough cookie. And you've got to be able to deliver on building her knowledge and building her confidence that she's making progress.
That is an absolute knowledge bomb, what you just said. You want to be their choice of fitness tomorrow. The base, I saw this pyramid recently, which I loved. The base of the pyramid, right? The base of the CrossFit pyramid is what?
It's nutrition.
Nutrition, then metabolic conditioning, right, and so forth. The base of the fitness pyramid in general is adherence. And we could have the best program in the world, but if they're not following it, it's worthless, right? And so what you're really, really good at, and this is what you were just talking about, is getting people to adhere to the program. And one of the big tenets of that is education and building confidence.
That's right. I think, and that's why I admire the people that come to the CrossFit Aerobic Capacity course, because they're there to build their knowledge. I mean, I ask a lot of questions in my course, and I said, let's just say you get a marathon runner that comes in your door. What is your value proposition? Well, if you're just a coach that looks good, how are you going to bring them in the door? Those are tough questions to ask, and it is really tough for them to answer. But if you're trying to build a business, if you're really trying to be a successful coach, the foundation is knowledge. And once those coaches build it, that's why the course is so fantastic, because in the beginning of the course, they're so vulnerable and they're so concerned on so many levels. And when they leave, the amount of excitement and enthusiasm, because they found a bunch of options that they truly understand, They're confident. And that I love.
And they own their training more because they understand it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about coaches, right? We all talk about athletes and being, you know, you need to be coachable, right? And we tell these athletes, it's like, I mean, games level, you need to tell me what you believe you need. Don't just make me guess. I need to know. I need to know your results. I need to know strengths and weaknesses. I need to know your struggles. The thing about it is that coaches are in the same boat. They must take ownership in their knowledge. I mean, what do you do if an athlete comes to you and says, so what's the purpose of this workout? Oh, well, I really like the way 2159 looks, right? That is not going to get them coming back.
That's not going to increase their buy-in, right?
Right.
That's not going to build trust. When you can come back with the intent based on a long-term approach and progression, that's a whole nother story.
That's right. Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. So yesterday, during the running workout, I do like running side by side with my athletes. It gives me a good tell of how they're doing. My course is aerobic capacity. Aerobic means, you know, oxygen. And I really am interested in when I run side by side, their utilization of oxygen. And what I'm looking for is their cycle of breathing and how many footsteps they take. And is the amount of foot strikes they're taking consistent from cycle of breath to cycle of breath? So what I'll do is I'll run side by side with people and I sync up my stride with theirs, and then I listen to their cycle and I start counting their footsteps. And so I went to this one woman that was in the course yesterday, and she was the second slowest person that was there. All right. So if we equate speed with experience, right, she was the second, you know, least experienced person there. I ran side by side with her and I started counting. And I said, I'm counting the number of footsteps you're taking per cycle of breath, and I'm looking for consistency. And I started counting, and I counted up to six, and then I counted six, six, six. And she looks over at me and she gives me a big smile. She knew that she was consistent in every one. Mm-hmm. I didn't need to say a thing.
Right.
I just looked at her, we both smiled, and I went on to the next person.
That's another really interesting piece to this adherence. Something Adi talks about all the time is, you know, in relation to nutrition, you can't always just look at the scale. In running, you can't always just look at the PR. You have to look at multiple measures of progress, because that's going to keep people motivated. If the scale isn't working that day, maybe you're the way you look or the way you feel or your energy levels. And this is the same exact thing, right? It's not necessarily the speed, but the consistency, the way you feel, the fact that you're showing up in the first place, all of these different ways to keep people coming back.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's why that workout that we do in the beginning, they really select their own intensity, but I am also very clear in what my expectations are. Mm-hmm. Very clear. I am expecting you to run 60 seconds out. You pick your pace, you get 10 seconds of rest, and I am expecting you to match your pace perfectly without a watch. You must do it by feel and land exactly in your original starting spot. And it is interesting that the people that pay attention, that don't chit-chat with their friends, that just focus on how they feel, developing the rhythm, the cadence, the consistency, they come back and imagine that mm-hmm. imagine running 60 seconds with no watch and landing in a 1 foot target.
Mm-hmm. What has, if anything, changed about your beliefs since starting, becoming the SME?
I think that I run into challenges for what we would classify as a traditional CrossFitter. Matter of fact, I get the biggest challenge from people that have been in the sport the longest. I applaud CrossFit. I tell people this all the time. You've got to acknowledge the fact that CrossFit brought me on board as a subject matter expert. And when they gave, you know, a specialty, I mean, I got aerobic capacity. That means I get everything from 2.5 minutes on. I mean, it's mm-hmm. incredible. They recognize, though, that the sport's evolving, that no one has it figured out. I mean, what Coach, he put together, this foundation, was incredible, considering it was done, you know, 10 plus years ago. But it's never going to stay the same. People are going to find better ways. And the reasoning is because CrossFit represents, the athletes that are participating in CrossFit, it represents a niche that has never really been supported before. On one end of the extreme, we've got these endurance athletes, right? So the people that want to run, you know, 10,000 meters all the way up to ultra marathons or Ironman distance events. And on the other side, we have these speed, strength, power athletes, right? Anybody from a sprinter to a strength-based athlete, anybody who's explosive. It's interesting that CrossFit has created a space for the non-specialist, the person who really just wants to go out and enjoy their fitness and not specialize in one thing. Mm-hmm. That has not been done. If you go out and you try and find data, you try and find information, research on how to make the recreational athlete more fit, it's just not been there. And I think that's what makes it exciting. And I applaud CrossFit that they recognize that we're all learning. There is no coach out there that has it figured out, because there's no data. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find really exciting, is what's going to come tomorrow based upon the things that we're doing within the sport. And that's why I share so much. I give all of my information away, everything, because I am trying to become a better coach. I am trying to get better information in. And if I only have one data point, it might be an anomaly.
Right.
And what I'm looking for is patterns. Like, for example, everybody wants to know, like, what was it like when Rich Froning called and he, you know, invited you to Cookeville and asked you to be his coach? It was awesome. I mean, I'm a fan of the sport. And I knew I could make him a better runner. But I also ran the risk of, what if I made him a worse CrossFit athlete? And what was really remarkable was, is that in working with Rich in that first 10 weeks, his mile time went from 6 minutes down to 5:41. But more importantly, he went on record and said that all of my lifts went up. My vertical leap went from 31 inches to 33 inches. So here's a 4x champion starting up a protocol of running 2 times per week, and he got stronger. Now, that would only be one data point if it was only Rich Froning, but that is a universal on every single athlete that I've ever worked with. They got stronger through a running-based program.
Love it, man.
Yeah, it was kind of wild. That's why, you know, working with Matt Frazier, he was the highest risk of them all, but because I was making no money, I thought, why not just hang out with Matt Frazier?
Yeah, what have you got to lose?
Right.
Who's been the toughest nut to crack?
You know, the toughest nut is not necessarily the one that's the least open-minded. It's the most distracted athlete with lots of other obligations. It's the one that, and I don't really have an answer on that. It's the one that's not coachable, right? Mm-hmm. That they're non-responsive. And I think a lot of the problem is that athletes don't recognize the amount of work that goes in and putting programming together that's truly personalized for them. Take Camille, for example. Camille, I've got to hand it to her. She has stuck with me for 4.5 years, and we constantly evolve and reinvent her programming because the easy stuff is gone. And so where are you going to find additional gains? A good example of that is Julie Fouché. Julie Fouché had one of the greatest aerobic systems. Matter of fact, I picked her to win the CrossFit Games in 2015 until she got hurt. She had the greatest aerobic system that I've ever, ever seen from testing protocols. And the thing about it was, is that she had a maximum sustainable pace that was 5% below her maximum effort. So if she went to failure, she can back down on all those movements within CrossFit, back off by about 5%. And sustain that. What I realized though on Julie Fouché was, is that you couldn't create any more improvements in long time domains. How am I gonna make her better? Well, her limitation was, is her intensity, her speed. If I now turn around and make her faster, I redefine what she defines as difficult, then everything else can climb. But that takes an athlete with some confidence that you know what you're doing. Because what you're proposing is I need to turn everything what you have been doing upside down, and we're now going to attack it from the other end.
Getting people strong, getting people bigger is the exact same way, right? If you're just doing high rep stuff and you've maximized what your muscle is capable of in terms of growth, you have to get that muscle stronger first, then bring the reps back up. It works the exact same way.
Yeah, I find that interesting, though. I think that what we do is we leave, and I agree with you, I think that what we do is we just continuously focusing on our max, and what we're not recognizing is that the other muscle fibers below the strongest of the strong, they need volume to be overloaded. And one of the things that we don't do is we're not developing the entire spectrum of muscle fibers within the individual athlete. So what I mean by that is, like, if you look at you know, your one rep, whatever lift it would happen to be, let's say it's just a deadlift, your one rep is your one rep. You can't do a two rep. But if I take the weight off, now all of a sudden you can do more. And if I keep reducing weight, you can keep doing more. And that's because as you slide down the spectrum from your fastest of fast to your slowest of slow, those slow, in order to be overloaded, need volume. And so what you have to do is, if you're looking at the human body and you're looking at the available arsenal, you have to look at the entire spectrum of muscle fibers, and are you actually developing the capacity of all of those? And too much within CrossFit is focused on the extreme of high intensity, high strength, high speed. And what we're seeing in slowing people down is that we're really truly developing the slow twitch fibers. And so when you go and lift a heavy object, those slow twitch fibers are now more trained, they are more excited, and they know how to be recruited. And then the lift actually is, numbers are going up. Mm-hmm. So I look at the whole spectrum, and I think that, you know, everybody thinks aerobic capacity is just running. In reality, aerobic capacity is developing the muscles that are moving. The muscles that are moving are the ones that are demanding your oxygen.
You skipped ahead a little bit, or what I wanted to talk about in a little bit, but we'll just go there. I was going to ask you, is aerobic capacity movement specific? And I kind of want to talk about what you started teaching in your seminar recently with using low intensity movements that mimic a high intensity effort, mm-hmm. right? Can you explain that whole theory and how you're practicing it with your athletes?
Yeah, so when you do a high intensity effort, something that requires force or requires, you know, strength, you're going to use your fast twitch fibers. And because of that, you're going to work anaerobically. And when you do that, your body's going to generate what we call lactic acid. And we measured in terms of our lactate. Well, that fatigue will continue to build if you keep using that level of intensity. And part of what we need to look at is, if that's the case, I can't just keep piling more of that lactate into my bloodstream. Eventually, it's going to hit a level where I will be forced to significantly slow down or stop. So how am I going to actually increase my work capacity in that particular movement? And that's the problem. So, like, take a games level athlete.
Before we go there, isn't it typically to just work slightly beyond that lactic threshold for a certain number of intervals? Isn't that how it's traditionally done?
It is, but it depends what you're trying to attack. And so if you're trying to raise your maximum sustainable pace, you would do a workout that has a consistent tempo mm-hmm. for a longer amount of duration. So you would do it in terms of rounds. The first round would be relatively simple, but you would maintain the pace in the second round. And because of the volume, the fatigue would stack. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you'd get to the point where you would reach your threshold. And then the last round, or maybe the last two rounds, would be above threshold. And so you would slowly be dosing your body with a higher level of lactate, something above your lactate threshold, so that your body can make those adaptations. Mm-hmm. The other example would be, though, is that if you're doing something that's very high intensity, that creates a tremendous amount of lactate, you work on your body's ability to clear that lactate. And those would be lactate clearance workouts. So think of, like, lactate as a shower faucet coming into the bathtub. It's going to fill up that bathtub unless you can get that lactate or that water from the shower head out of the tub. How are you going to accelerate the rate of recovery? If I can remove your fatigue at a faster rate, that means you can turn that faucet on higher. Now your intensity went up because I have created an ability to clear that fatigue faster. What we're focused too much on is trying to turn the faucet up higher and higher and higher, mm-hmm. when in fact what we should be doing is focusing on our ability to clear that fatigue. If I can clear the fatigue at a faster rate, I can turn on the faucet at a faster rate and still stay below my maximum sustainable pace.
I love, you know what I love about you? After 4 days of being at the Brute Retreat, we had just presented for two full days, we were having drinks, and you're still talking about this. You are so passionate about what you do. It's incredible. I love that.
That was so funny. Yeah, that was funny. We were sitting there and having dinner, and you guys were all talking, and the table was filled, and I just was quiet for a long time, and finally, I just couldn't stand it anymore. I'm like, yeah, I raised my hand, and I'm like, you guys keep talking about volume. You keep talking about volume, but let's classify volume, mm-hmm. right? I did 7 hours a day for 7 years, and mm-hmm. That's volume, right? When you talk about getting...
That's when you got the nickname Chainsaw, right?
No,
there.
No. No, that was pre... That was pre...
Pre-Chainsaw.
Yeah, well, that was pre.
I want to illustrate the importance of aerobic capacity even further. Will you tell the story of... Or let's talk about Matt Frazier winning the sprint event last year. 2 years ago, he came almost dead last on the sprint event, and then this year he got second place. Right?
Yep.
So can you explain why that might be the case and how that relates to aerobic capacity? And I'll tell you what, before you answer that, we're going to go on a quick break.
Okay.
And then we'll come back in.
Sounds good. Yep.
All right, we're back. We're talking about Matt Frazier winning the sprint event
this past year.
Yeah, getting second place when the year before he almost came dead last. How did that happen?
So I'm a fan of programming. I love looking at coaches and what they write in it, and it gives me some insight into their base of knowledge and their biasness, right? So, I mean, I think that I'm clearly biased in my side, and you can see that in my programming. I think that's one of the things that I value about Brute Strength and what they're doing is that I submit my programming in to someone who takes it and cleans all the biasness out and gives athletes what they need, right, mm-hmm. to create a balance. And so I honestly look at Dave Castro and the things that he programs, and I don't think that people give him nearly enough credit on how creative and how smart he is in his programming. And he doesn't let people in on it, right? And it's not by accident. It's not, he's doing things that give us insights into these athletes. If you look at those results, you can see the strengths and weaknesses of every single athlete that ever has gone through. Whether they are aerobically weak, whether they're a fast twitch-based athlete, whether or not they're good at certain time domains, you just know. So what Castro did in 2016 is he created these three events near the end of the games. And he kind of did a fantastic setup because we have seen events like this in the past where they're very short duration, there's very small amount of rest. And what he did is he did three events basically back to back to back. And one of them, the first one, was a handstand walk across the length of the field. It was 93 yards. And the second event was a shuttle sprint. And the shuttle sprint was the biggest surprise for people. And what they did is they ran to the middle of the field. They ran back to their starting around, you know, dummy blocker, then all the way across the field around a dummy blocker and finished. So that was about 280 yards in distance. They had a small amount of rest, and then they had to pull a plow. They pulled it across the length of the field and then back again. So that was about 186 yards. Everybody looked at that workout, and they looked at it and they said, that's a hand upper body movement, shoulders, arms, and then it's into a legs. And then what they had to do was pull that plow, which was really a strength endurance. It was about recruitment of fast twitch fibers to pull the load. That's why this is so genius, is it tested the knowledge of the coach and it tested the knowledge of the athlete. It was not a series of sprint events. This was an endurance workout, and all three of them were considered one. And what I mean by that is that if you look at Matt Frazier and what he did, look at how he managed himself during that handstand walk. He broke it up. Because the thing is that he recognized that if he didn't break that up, the upper body would generate a tremendous amount of fatigue, and that lactate would try and be consumed by the slow twitch fibers in the arms, but because there's a small amount, it wouldn't be able to keep up with the amount of work being done. So that lactate would go to the neighboring muscle groups, and when that couldn't burn it off, it would go into the bloodstream. That's called lactate shuttle. What Matt Frazier has done is a phenomenal job at developing his legs' aerobic capacity. When that lactate hits the bloodstream, it goes to the largest muscle group in the body, the legs. It creates pre-fatigue without even using the legs. Because Matt Frazier has developed his ability to remove lactate better than any other athlete, and we saw that in the 7K run, dominated, mm-hmm. right? So when they finished that event, the athletes that weren't really aware of the leg fatigue, they're just thinking, oh, now it's lower body. 3, 2, 1, go. And what do? They sprint like they've never sprinted before. The thing is that what Castro did is that he mimicked a workout that he did in 2012. They did a 300-yard shuttle sprint in 2012, right?
2012.
Yeah, they did. That was a loaded question.
Yeah.
And in 2012, what they did is they did it 300 yards. Here's the thing is Matt Frazier did get second place in 2016 in the shuttle sprint. He got second place. But the question is how good was Matt Frazier's time in 2016 relative to 2012? Matt Frazier, if you take an equivalent time from 2012, you would have placed 35th.
Wow.
Right. So the question would be is then, has everybody gotten that slow? Or did something else happen? And what happened was is that Dave Castro didn't give enough rest for these athletes to clear the lactate that went from their upper body into their legs. They were pre-fatigued before starting. So the athlete that was the most aerobically fit in terms of their legs' ability to clear that lactate were the ones that were going to do the best. Tia Toomey, perfect example. She wins that event, right? Tia Toomey's equivalent time in 2012 would have placed her 20th.
Wow.
How'd Tia do in the 7K run? You turn around now, and now you've got a huge problem. You've got to now go into a strength endurance workout, the plow. The problem is that the athletes that mismanage their tactics, their approach in the first event and the second, the shuttle sprint, now their body, because Castro again doesn't give them enough time to recover, is flooded with lactate. Here's the problem. If you have that much lactate on board and you're not allowed time to clear it, then the problem is your ability to recruit fast twitch fibers under heavy doses of lactate is almost impossible to do. So what you were seeing was is athletes that would take off and pull that plow, and then recruitment would start shutting down. Instead of at 100% muscular capacity, they'd be at 99, 98, 97. And there were athletes that they just couldn't pull the plow on the way back. And it wasn't because they lacked pride. It wasn't because they were not strong. It was because they mismanaged the workouts and they weren't aerobically fit. Look at the women and who did the best in the plow. Sam Briggs and Katrin, right? Mm-hmm. How'd they do in the 7K run? So part of that workout was, and what's so terrific about it, is it tested the knowledge of the athlete and the coach. Phenomenal.
That's so fascinating, the comparison of the different years.
Isn't it?
Absolutely fascinating.
And that is not by accident. That's why he programs things in there that you look and it tells you. They had a broad jump, right, in one of the years in the past. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the purpose of that? It's not for the sake of measuring people out. It's to look at the type of athletes that are the best. Mm-hmm. A broad jump is the single number one measure for fast twitch fiber recruitment, right? Who are the fast twitch athletes in the sport? That is the tell.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you run a ton with your athletes. Why do you do that? And do you think that any coach that's capable of doing such a thing, working out with their athletes, should?
Well, from an ego standpoint, I like smashing them. it's the one area that I can still do well. Yeah. No, it really is the tell for me to see how they're doing. A lot of athletes will say that the workout may be too hard. And if I listen to them, I will find out if it really is too hard for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever want to do, you know, my workouts are all personalized. They're all specific paces, specific distances, specific amounts of rest and types of rest. And they're very complicated that they do. And I'm not trying to crush them. I'm trying to maximize adaptation in the most efficient way possible. And when I run with them, I really get a good idea if I'm hitting the sweet spot. You know, it's the thing about it is that if you get an athlete, you know, just take Katrin and she wants to run 2 times or 3 times per week, that's all you get. And so you don't get a chance to make mistakes, right? I can't make up for my poor coaching with volume. I've got to be right. And so when I go out and run with them, it really gives me a good indication of the workout that I had written and the relationships between the distances they ran, the intensities they ran it at, and the type of recovery I programmed.
You just said something really interesting. You don't get a chance to make up for your poor coaching with high volume. Do you get a sense that there are coaches out there doing that? And you don't have to name any names, obviously, but is that an issue?
I think a lot of coaches, they don't understand the intent and the result of what they're putting on paper. I am routinely challenged by my athletes of what's the purpose of this workout? Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this? And you have to understand that everything that you do has, you know, an impact metabolically and from a muscle fiber standpoint. And these athletes, they don't have unlimited time. And every single workout must have a purpose. And I treat the same thing for the recreational athlete too. It's like, if they're going to pick me in that particular moment, it must be the highest value of their time. It's not just because the numbers look good. Mm-hmm.
It really struck a chord with me because I could see that in myself. And at times when I wasn't as confident about what I was programming, you just put in more volume. If you're not exactly sure what they need, you just make them do all of it.
And that's what I did as a triathlete, right? Yeah. My coaches and I look back on that and I never asked why, ever. Mm-hmm. I never asked, why am I doing 10 by 1 mile today? I just did that yesterday.
Right.
And I think that it is more challenging. And that's why I think that the coach that wants to learn ultimately is going to rise to the top, because they'll see things that will bring about a higher level of adaptation in a more efficient and effective way possible. We are all chasing people's time, and time is going to get more limited, and we have to be really precise, and the solution is not volume, mm-hmm. right? It's really all about precision. And that's why, like, when you look at, you know, programming, it's, you've got to add an element of personalization. You know, like if you look at Dan Bailey, the guy's got, a somewhere around a 50-second 400 time, and let's say he's a 5:30 miler, does he really need to work on his speed? Does he need to work on his high intensity? Or is the highest value of his time somewhere else? So if you had a coach that's just saying, hey, we got to follow the protocol, I need you to go out and do more sprinting,
right?
It's not the highest and best use of his time. And I think that that's where the knowledge-based coach is looking at things and saying, hey, you know what? You're unique in this way. Here's the highest value. This is the best use of your time.
Yeah, the hard part about it is like you were talking about earlier, no one has the answers to this equation yet. And so it requires every coach to kind of hang out in this uncomfortable space of not being certain about something, but always asking the questions like, why am I doing this? And explaining everything they can to their athletes.
Well, So I went to the competitors course with Matt Chan and Chris Spieler. I mean, and Eric was there too, but I talked to the two of them, Spieler and Chan, and I'll never forget it. Spieler looked at me and he says, Chris, you know what though? No one has it figured out. Nobody. Well, in that moment, I was very vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. And he turned around and he told me, he says, no one has it figured out, which meant I'm free to ask questions because no one knows what they're doing. And here's Chan and Spieler saying that. And so it's like, I'm going to ask questions. And so I tell people the same thing. I don't have it figured out either. I'm still searching for answers. And so if you have questions, ask me, because no one has that answer. There is no definitive way yet.
Right.
We have really good ideas. And I think that what I've got going on is clearly in a good direction, but it is no way defined.
Right. What do you think of regionals this year being so engine heavy? And also, do you think this has implications for what the games will look like?
I find it interesting if you go back and you look at time domains, right? And that's the thing. We don't know what games level workouts are going to be, but we certainly know, based upon history, the volumes that we've been asked to do, right? And we can train for those volumes. As kind of a known. It may not be 300 air squats, maybe 200, but we know that Dave's program that distance before? Would we be surprised to see a 10-mile run? Of course not, because we know that those things have been out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. I see the trend in terms of the way in which programming is done going into longer time domains. Let's face it, CrossFit is really, it is an endurance sport. And if you look at regionals, there is no question that regionals is an endurance weekend. And the games is a step, several steps beyond that. Just if you think about it in terms of the events, even if they were all short duration events, the fact that you've got to do 4 days of competitions makes an endurance event. That athlete that can replenish their carbohydrate stores and recover every night and come back is an aerobic-based athlete. They must address their ability to recover. One of the single biggest measures of aerobic fitness is your ability to recover. Mm-hmm. So the direction, and I don't think it's a bad thing, I think that these time domains getting longer and longer are just driving the importance of recovery home. This is a multi-day event, and if your aerobic system is not dialed in, you're never going to be there on that final day. And that's what made Rich Froning so phenomenal, right? The amount of volume training that he did in secret allowed him to dominate on that last day.
What should endurance training look like for those games athletes right now? It being their preseason, right? Still their pre last big event, which is very similar to what it should look like for most people leading up to the Open.
That's a good question.
Versus what it should look like for the rest of people, being that it's the beginning of their off season. So I'm asking, what's the difference between endurance training and off season and preseason?
So the thing is that you have to, we don't know, and that's the beauty of CrossFit. We do not know the time domain that the athletes will have to perform. We don't know. We know based upon history that there is a broad range of those time domains. So we must be prepared for every one of those time domains up to, let's say, 90 minutes long. So we also know that if your body, it doesn't practice a particular movement and practice a speed or an intensity or a weight within that movement, it will not be prepared. So meaning if you train at a 6 minute mile and now all of a sudden you have to run a 10 minute mile, the way your body recruits muscle fibers and sequences them and fatigues them is totally unique from 6 versus 10. So the athletes now that are preparing for the games, they're already fit. What they need to be doing is making sure that if a particular time domain gets programmed, that the body recognizes it. Meaning if you look at an event, you're seeing, oh, that's 5 minutes. Do I have 5 minute intensity practiced in my body? Remember what I said at the beginning of this podcast. When people show up at my seminar, I have them go out and I have them run without a watch and I have them run it by feel. Mm-hmm. The pace that I give them is a 30 minute time domain intensity. That's what I give them. That's their target. Their body learns how to replicate that pace perfectly. We don't need any fancy gadgetry. And so what I would encourage athletes to do that are trying to make, you know, a good performance at the games, they need to be looking at the time domains and is their body prepared? If they're only practicing 3 minute time domains, they're only going to be good at 3 minute time domains. Every single intensity uses different muscle fibers. A one rep uses completely different muscle fibers than a 100 rep with a PVC, mm-hmm. right? A 100 meter sprint, totally different muscle fibers than a 5K run. You must practice the speed and the movement. So I end up for my athletes that are going to the games, we practice, you know, the intensities of 1 minute max effort, 2, 5, 10, 20, 40, 60, 90, and 180 minutes. We practice those all the time. The contrast is in the off season, we narrow that list down to 3. We narrow it down to really a low intensity, an aerobic level event. We do lactate threshold, which is maximum sustainable pace, and then we do high intensity VO2 training.
What are those 3 time domains?
Like a aerobic threshold is something that's somewhere in the speed of around 90 minutes. So it's long, slow distance training, time on your feet, building muscular stamina, building ligaments and tendons, building your structure.
Right.
Lactate threshold is time domains between 20 and 40 minutes, and then anything under 6 minutes, I would consider high intensity VO2 training.
For the open level athlete, they don't necessarily need to prepare their joints for running to be able to run in the open, but I know that you prescribe running for a lot of open level athletes. Mm-hmm. Why is that the case?
The thing about it is that you must look at the movements within CrossFit, and there are movements monostructurally where the body is supported, meaning you do not have to support your structure. So you look at the rower, for example. There is a reason why there's weight classes in the rower, because the heaviest athletes don't get punished by their weight. The fact is that bigger athletes have a larger VO2 max. That is true aerobic capacity, right? Is individual by individual. But when we look at aerobic power, we divide that aerobic capacity number, that VO2, by their body weight. Now weight matters. When you are having to support your structure, your weight does come into a factor. And if you are not prepared to carry your load, right, now you're at a deficit. So part of what you must do in the off season is to prepare your structure from a foundation, right? Prepare it for all the standing that it is going to be doing, because there aren't many movements where you're not supporting your body weight.
So basically, running is going to translate in more ways than, it's going to translate better than rowing or biking.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that we all know in doing CrossFit that we, you know, there's this theory of specificity that you must do the specific movement to get better at it. We know in CrossFit that that also is not true. If you do enough movements that are similar to that particular movement, you see gains. And we see that in times where we haven't done a particular movement and we go back to it and it's like, whoa, I just PR'd and I haven't done that in 3 months.
Right.
So we see that. What I'm saying is that when we look at the movements within CrossFit and you look at the movement of running where you're supporting your structure, right? There are a lot of common movements. So you have box jumps, you have wall balls, you have your air squats, you have your thrusters, you have your squats, you have your jump rope, double unders, single unders. There are a lot of them that are similar in nature. If you do not develop in the off season your foundation, your aerobic level slow twitch muscle fibers, when you go to stack on intensity, how is that intensity ever going to actually clear from your body? How do you get it out? Mm-hmm. And so part of what we need to do is recognize that we are very, very good within CrossFit in attacking and piling in fatigue, high intensity. But at what point do you practice the ability to recover? Mm-hmm. Right? If you constantly are pushing in the high intensity, you're never going to develop the ability to go beyond that. Take, for example, we know that there's 300 air squats at the CrossFit Games. If you cannot do 300 air squats with a 20-pound vest, what are you doing to fix it? Are you saying that your solution is to do 1 rep, 5 rep, 10 rep back squats? Or are you saying that maybe I should put a protocol together to help me clear that fatigue better, to clear it actively? And that is a different type of training. And I think that's where the elites are. The people like Matt Fraser and Katrin and Camille and Sarah and Tia, they have figured those things out. I can't just work on my 1 rep, 3 rep, 5 rep because the volumes in the CrossFit Games require me to clear my intensity. They require me to clear that fatigue. Mm-hmm. How am I going to accelerate the removal so I could stack more intensity in? And that is where those elites are. They get it.
Yeah, I think the sweet spot for the open level athlete too is even to improve their abilities in the 5 to 15 minute range, they actually have to increase their aerobic capacity in the first place to sustain that training.
You have to remember that we talk about aerobic capacity, everybody looks at it as like, oh, that's long, slow distance, long, slow. What we're talking about is improving your rate of recovery. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. You can do Fran, and you can flood your body with lactate, and you can lay on the ground, and you know what? That lactate will clear in 1 hour in doing nothing. But are there things that you can do to accelerate the removal of that lactate? Your slow twitch fibers love lactate as a fuel. They'll take it as the preferred choice if it knows how to process it. So why not do Fran to generate tremendous levels of lactate? That lactate now will be out in your whole body. What's your weakest movement, by the way?
Weakest?
In terms of moderate load, high volume.
Snatch, full snatch.
Okay, I'm gonna have you do Fran, and I'm gonna have you do it in the roughest time domain. I want you to finish it in between 2 and 3 minutes. So you're tasked with picking the load that makes you finish it in 2 to 3 minutes. That is the highest risk time domain of any event. You're gonna finish it, and then what I want you to do is, instead of laying on the floor after Fran, I want you to pick up a PVC, and I want you to recover doing PVC snatches. No stopping, just nice and slow. And the thing about it is that your body after Fran is gonna be flooded with lactate. What we wanna do is we wanna train the muscle groups in the area that you need the most work, the snatch, and we wanna train those muscles on how to pull that lactate out of the bloodstream and process it as a fuel. We actually are using Fran to train the ability to recover in the movement of a snatch.
And why did you ask me what my weakest was? Because just to make me look bad, or is there...
No, because the thing is that if you look at it in terms of the snatch and looking at moderate loads, right, moderate weights and doing moderate volumes, it's not usually the strength in a CrossFit athlete that is their weakness. It's the ability of clearing the fatigue. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the event 17.5, 17.5 had 90 thrusters in it. How are you going to get better at moving the bar for 90 reps? What is the solution, right? Mm-hmm. And the solution is two-part. I need to, like you said in the beginning, I have to be able to move the weight. Mm-hmm. So my one rep, three rep is very important, but I also must clear the fatigue that's being generated from the volume. How am I, what is my protocol to remove that fatigue as I continue accumulating reps? How do I recover at a faster rate while doing it? And that is your aerobic system.
Boom. That's all we got for today, guys. I got a couple fun ones to finish. If you were a woman,
oh boy,
which of your female athletes do you think you would be? Or who would you be most
That's
like?
That's so easy. I'd be Julie Fouché. I mean, she's smart.
Because she's got the best engine.
And she's smart. I'd take smart over engine.
Damn. You're going to get in some real trouble. I didn't think you were going to answer that one.
No, for sure I would. I'm as easy, though. She's smart, and she's got a great engine, and she fixed her speed. And
nice.
Yeah, that was easy.
Part two. If you woke up tomorrow and you were in Kanye West's body, but you still had Chris Henshaw's brain,
okay,
and you had to play a show later on that night,
yeah,
would you do it or would you pull out? You don't know any of the songs.
And I'd go for it. So the thing about, I'd go for it for sure. So the reason why I missed doing the Hawaiian Ironman, the reason is the anxiety. That anxiety, I wish I could stop time about 8 seconds before the cannon goes off. That whatever that is, mm-hmm. I wish I could have that all the time. I mean, that was my addiction. And that's why when I started CrossFit and I was able to do workouts and compete, it brought about that same feeling. But when you go into something totally unprepared, that anxiety is even heightened more. And I love that. I just... Yeah. And so I'd go for it. I'll never forget, you know, when I had to do a seminar, and you know, this whole course got started because of Matt Chan, and we had dinner one night on a Saturday, and he scribbled all of my ideas, and he says, "You've got to share this with the community." I'm like, "Never going to happen. I'm not prepared. I don't know enough, and no way." And 2 days later, he says, "I just booked you at my gym at CrossFit Verve, and you're on this Saturday, 8 hours, and I've already collected money." It's like, wow. Like, hell, and yeah, that feeling came back.
Yeah.
And that's how we got started.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. I appreciate this.
Thanks, man.
This was even better than the last one.
Yeah, it's good.
Where can people find out more about your seminars, more about aerobic capacity, if they want programs, where do they go?
So the course with CrossFit, it's CrossFit Aerobic Capacity, and you can look up the courses on the training page within CrossFit. You could also go to my website, it's aerobiccapacity.com. We do have personalized programming. As a matter of fact, we just launched an app. It's in beta right now. You could submit your name and a request to be about the beta launch of the new program, which is super cool. There's also 6 workouts on there every single week. I'm obviously one of the coaches in Brute, which I am super proud of. You know, it's funny, I meant to tell you, I had a lot of people come up to me yesterday and they said, so what kind of time domains do you program within Brute? And I said, you know what's so unique about Brute is that I program the same number of time domain intensities as I do for all the elite level CrossFitters, that their programming and the algorithm is the same thing. And so that was kind of cool to be able to be a part of that yesterday. Yeah, so if you go there, you can also catch it there. Like I said, I give away a lot of things, and you'll be able to reach out through me at info@aerobiccapacity.com. If you've got questions, I really genuinely try and give back to the community. I am beyond grateful for what I've been able to do here. And so any way in which I can help, I'm happy to do it.
And then Instagram at Henshaw363.
363.
And Snapchat Lil Henny. All right, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thank you.